the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to Beyond the Pitch. I'm your host as always, Phil Brown, and delighted to be joined with fantastic David Amayal. Needs no introduction, of course. If you follow football at all, you'll know who this man is. Been a guy that we've had on BTP for years now, not as frequent today as what we'd like. He has his own podcast, of course. Dave, why don't you tell us a little bit about the podcast for those who haven't heard anything about it?
Well, first of all, to say that I've been on BTP is understating it. Like, I feel like I was discovered by you guys in this medium, so it's awesome to chat with you. So, yeah, in the past year, I'm coming up on my one-year anniversary. I wanted to start doing my own podcast. It's called Calcioland. A lot of Italian football, but we focus on transfers, and we try to tie in the Premier League. We have a lot of Manchester United, Chelsea, all fans of the Premier League following us, and I'm thrilled that we're getting a lot of them to get into Italian football as well. So if you enjoy those things, we also mix in a little bit of pop culture here and there. So we try to do something a little bit original. So check it out. I also look forward to having you back on the show, Phil, because you might not know this, but the show we did together on my podcast has been our most downloaded episode by far. So I got to get you back on. So.
Absolutely. I think people tuned in for a car crash with me. So I'm always honored. How are you finding the podcast, and Dave, are you liking it, or what are you, is it everything you thought it would be?
Well, you know, what I really like about it is it's like a new skill set. Like, I really enjoy interviewing people, too. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a whole new skill set for me. Like, you know, I started off in being a guest on your show, and I kind of like being on the other side of things. That's one thing I've learned with you guys. You know, as the host, it's all about making the guests shine. So I enjoy that. I've gotten to meet a ton of cool people. It's going really well. So, yeah, it's been everything that I expected and then some.
Yeah, it's, I must say, you know, with the podcasting, there's parts of this that aren't fun. You're lucky you have a producer. We have a guy that does most of our audio editing and everything else. But on the rare occasion when that left down to me to do all that stuff, that is the worst part of it. But the positive part of it is, the positive part of it is, it's got me in the position where I can interview people I never in a million years thought I'd be fortunate enough to speak to. It's got me introduced to people that I never thought I would be lucky enough to meet. The journey of podcasting for me has been incredible, and the doors that BTP's opened for me has been incredible. So it's great to see you doing your own thing, Dave. It's all intersectional, you know. So you have your Italian football, and it's not like it was when we were growing up where these leagues were completely separate. They're all so related now that it's impossible to talk about football without talking about Serie A, La Liga, Premier League, Bundesliga, all that stuff. So anyway, I'll start with Juventus, because they had a superb result away to Tottenham last night, of course. As we record this, AC Milan are 2-0 down at home to Tottenham. But we'll start with Juventus. Fantastic, disciplined performance, Dave. It's quite interesting because a lot of the English media that slaughter Jose Mourinho for being defensive were quite impressed with Juve's defensive. the way they certainly were not, they didn't go out with a defensive mindset, clearly, given the first leg result, but they marveled at Juve's defending. Quite an emotional game for them, given the situation with the story, of course. But brilliant performance and an exceptional result.
Yeah, I very interesting because I saw you tweeting that, and I agree. You know, a lot of the people that criticize Mourinho and the way he's doing things at Manchester United last night were on the bandwagon of the great discipline and the great defensive style football of Juve. And, you know, that was a typical Juve match. I think, you know, in a lot of ways we live in a world of, like, stereotypes and expectations. I think at Manchester United, you know, we're not used to seeing them play that way.
Absolutely.
While Italian teams are really known for this. So it's kind of funny how people can see it as a virtue when it suits them, and maybe not so much as a virtue when it makes sense for them to criticize. So I think, you know, if you're not that familiar with Juve, that's a typical a Juve in a win in a big match as you're going to see. You can just never count them out. I know a lot of people, kind of almost including myself, after Spurs took the lead, I thought this is going to be over. But then in the span of a few minutes, Juve completely turned the game around. So, it was definitely a very exciting match for sure.
How much of this is down to Max Allegri? Because my previous co-host, as you know, massive Milan fan, was not a lover of Max Allegri. He at one time called him the Italian David Moyes, which I think is very unfair considering what he's achieved. But here's a guy that's been linked with the world's top jobs. He's done a fantastic job. He was a surprising choice for me when Conte left and he took that job at Juventus.
Of course, yeah.
You must be very impressed with how he has done his job at Juventus, Dave, because he's done a fantastic job there.
Yeah, I think, you know, what really sticks out to me about Allegri at Juve, since he's been there, I think Juve has played like about 90% of the potential matches that they could have in a season. So to give you an example, you know, they always go deep in the Coppa Italia, the Italian League Cup, except for the time they were eliminated in the round of 16 by Bayern. They've made deep runs in the Champions League. And of course, you know, in Serie A, he's won the title every season. So he's kept them right there, very consistent at the top. And you look at the squad, Juve's had a lot of turnover in recent years. You look at the names of the players that have left, Pogba, Vidal, Tevez, Pirlo, Bonucci recently. And Juve just keeps, hitting on all cylinders. So I think Allegri deserves a lot of credit. I found these matches against Spurs were really fascinating tactically, because in the first leg, Allegri basically started all the offensive players he had at his disposal, but played a very defensive match, almost too much, in my opinion. And yesterday, he starts with a little bit more conservative team, but then turns the game around by bringing in two defenders in the second half, Lichtsteiner and Asamoah, and that changed the game. They weren't offensive players. They really changed the team that way. So it just goes to show it's not necessarily the roles or the positions. It's what he does with them. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. I think the players, of course, deserve it too. But I think Allegri, and I think our friend Rory Smith put it the best, Juve was the best team for only 14 minutes in these two matches, and that was enough. And we've seen Allegri do this a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say this for all you Juventus fans out there, but that game reminded me so much of the 1999 semi-final, where the first leg ended up a draw, and United went to Stadio dell'Alpi, of course, and and turned it around after being 2-0 down, and in the first 10 minutes after Inzaghi got a couple, and it reminded me of that. The great teams are never dead. You can never assume that the game is won, and one goal changes everything. I want to ask you, because you brought up something there about the departures that people have left Juventus. I want to ask you about Dybala, because the English press very, very impressed with Dybala, of course, being linked with a number of teams in the past. He's still the Juventus player by the end of the summer?
It's a hard one to say. I think there's a pretty good chance that he is. I draw a lot of parallels between Pogba and Dybala. We've seen Pogba stay at Juve four seasons. Of course, the year that he inherited the number 10 jersey was the last year he had at Juve. Dybala is now currently in his third season. He just got the number 10. I think Dybala has had a very up and down season at Juve. For the first 2-3 months in Serie A, he probably was the best player in the league, then fell off a cliff, got hurt. And recently, you know, he's come back, had two huge goals against Lazio and last night. So, you know, Juve's policy is simple. If a big name player wants to leave, they won't stand in the way. So I think it ultimately will come down to Dybala. I don't like to look too much into body language and celebrations and whatnot. Yesterday, he seemed to be really into the team. So I think we have to see a little bit how the season evolves. I think, you know, there's not that many clubs that can afford Dybala anyways in the first place. So we have to see how their offense shakes out. So at this time, if you put a gun to my head, I would give it maybe 65%. He stays at Juve, 35% he leaves. We also have to see, you know, what he does in the World Cup. Yeah. I think Juve's been preparing for life after Dybala, in a sense. They brought in Bernardeschi last summer. There's really not a defined role for him quite yet. He's been very good before he got hurt. So I think Juve's prepared for all avenues. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if in the summer the bigger name that sacrificed is Alexandro and Dybala leaves stays another season. But at this time, I could really see it going either way. I'm just going to give it a slight bigger chance he stays at least one more season.
Okay, I need you to settle an argument for me. Paul Pogba. Okay. Paul Pogba. Yeah. Because there is huge debate amongst United fans about what his best position is, about whether he's got tactical discipline. One of the things that I'd said a week ago was it's ridiculous to me to suggest that Paul Pogba has no tactical discipline when he's got two European Cup finals in a row with Juventus and played in one of the most tactical leagues in the world, and he shone and he was fantastic. What is Paul Pogba's best position and how would you plan, Dave?
It's a great question because, like many, I really felt that the addition of Matic, who came this summer, was really going to be the player that was going to unleash him in the role, like more, give him more freedom, offensive responsibilities. And I think for a while we did see that, but recently that hasn't been the case. So, you know, I think a lot of people, when they want to criticize Pogba, they just point out, yeah, he was great as long as he had Vidal and Pirlo around him. And there is some truth to that. But I thought Pogba, too, some of his best moments at Juve were in his last season, when, of course, Vidal and Pirlo were long gone. He was really the main guy in the midfield. So I think, you know, that criticism might be a little bit unfair. I just think it's more of like philosophy. I think Mourinho and Pogba have polar different ways of looking at football in general. So I'm not sure if they're a great fit in that sense. You know, again, I thought, you know, had Matic kept playing the way he did at the beginning of the season, maybe we'd see more of Pogba. I'd like to see maybe United get like a playmaker type, someone kind of in Pirlo style. So we see a midfield like at the peak that Juve had with Vidal, Pirlo and Pogba. Maybe something along those lines could work well to give him even more freedom to play. So that's really what I would probably do. I think Pogba's getting, though, a little bit too much of unfair criticism, in my opinion.
Okay, we settled that argument, and you're on my side. Thanks, Matt.
And we didn't organize this ahead of time, by the way.
I want to ask you about another Champions League game that took place the other night. PSG, Real Madrid. So much discussion about Verratti, and look, this is a player that Xavi talked about being the heir to his throne. He looked sensational when he went to PSG early on. I remember his performance in 2015 in Champions League, and he was, I think it was against Chelsea in the Champions League. He was sensational that day.
Yeah,
but yet here's a guy that when you look at the World Cup, for example, in the group stage when Spain played Italy, Giorgio Chiellini had more completed passes, twice as many, and was embarrassed by Isco. It seems like his development is stunted. Also, there's question marks now over Verratti with his discipline in big games, because here he is sent off again. Does he need to leave PSG?
I don't know if he needs to leave PSG, and I'm with you. There's been definitely disappointment recently. He's definitely stalling. I mean, this year he'll turn 26. Can you really say he's better than he was 2 years ago? You could almost say that he's been worse. You mentioned the discipline problems are still the same. You know, it's interesting that when Pogba was at Juve and there was a lot of debate on who's better between Pogba and Verratti, and this was a few years ago, the storyline was always, Pogba dominates Serie A, but put him in a big Champions League match, he'll disappear. And a lot of people would say Verratti doesn't do that. But now that storyline has changed. Now, when people talk about Verratti, they're like, oh, he's a bully in Ligue 1, but in Europe, he does nothing. So he's definitely taken a step back. You know, they love him at PSG. That's a club that does not let players go if they're under contract. So now he has Mino Raiola as his agent. Let's see what happens there. I wouldn't be surprised if Conte heads to PSG next. So I think he could be a good influence for him. But at the same time, it's not like Verratti when he played for Conte on Italy set the world on fire either. So definitely an interesting player. He's definitely not evolving. You could almost say he's getting worse. So, for Italian football, not just PSG, this isn't great news, because he was really looked at the heir apparent to Pirlo, and we're definitely not seeing that recently.
So you think Conte goes to PSG this summer?
I think there's a decent chance. If I had to say that, that would be my guess. The Italian national team, he'd have to commit to it for 4 years, you know, because that's when the next World Cup for Italy is. I don't know if he just wants to do another Euro, you know, he's still a young coach. I don't see a logical fit for him back in Italy, especially now with Gattuso aside from this game against Arsenal that's going on now. So I don't know. That makes a lot of sense to me. You know, he always complains about a lack of budget on the transfer market. Granted, PSG would have their own financial fair play issues, although it seems that doesn't hold them back in any way. And I think, you know, for him, it would make sense because, like PSG, the only thing they really need to prove is in the Champions League. So maybe they can both really focus on that. So, again, you know, March things could change. But at this time, if I had to guess, that's where I think he'd be next. And I'd be intrigued to see what happens with Berardi with Conte there.
I want to ask you about everybody's favorite second team, and that's Napoli.
Yeah.
Napoli are a highlights clip dream. Every goal they score is, you're scratching your head going, that is just beautiful to watch. They're ahead in Serie A with the skin of their teeth, of course. Disappointing result this weekend against Roma.
Yeah.
We're behind Juventus. This, however, this team is just breathtaking to watch, Dave. How good are Napoli?
Really, really good. And I'll tell you, you know, they're somewhat similar to what you guys in the Premier League see with Man City, and they do it without the resources of Man City, which to me, they get more credit for that. Now, obviously, what happened over the weekend was really a devastating blow, because in the span of 2 minutes, and this is typical of Juve, it looked like Juve was going to draw to Lazio, and Napoli could really open a big lead in the standings. Then Dybala's goal happened, and that was such a gut punch to Napoli. I almost felt like it was inevitable that they weren't going to win against Roma. I didn't expect them to lose them by that much. So they really need to show that they have a strong reaction. Now they're out of all other competitions. They really didn't try in the Europa League. I'm in the camp that I don't think they really were trying in the Champions League either. I think they were doing the bare minimum from the beginning of the season. They were dead set on just going all in for the Serie A title. A lot of people criticized them for their plan. I didn't. I just don't think you can apply the standards of a club like Manchester United or Juve to Napoli. They need to focus on one thing. So the optics are terrible, because right after they're eliminated in the Europa League, they take in the league. But I didn't expect Napoli to recover. Juve beat them in Naples last December, and they did. So let's see if they have another reaction. As far as the way they play, it's really fantastic, really a lot of talented player. Their manager, Sarri, you know, even Guardiola and Pochettino have praised them a lot, and for good reason. So it's going to be an exciting end to the season. I thought Dybala's goal against Lazio was really hurt Napoli's chances for the title, but his goal against Spurs might help Napoli's chances, because Juve, still in the Champions League, had they been dropped out, I think they would have run away with Serie A. So Dybala made up for that goal against Lazio yesterday.
Dries Mertens, obviously the guy getting so much of the praise. He's been sensational for Napoli. But another player that's been turning a lot of heads is Jorginho. Of course, lots of clubs like the look of him. He's defensive midfielder. Does Napoli hold on to him this summer? And if not, where do you think he goes?
I have a feeling he might leave this summer. And he's been really good, and Sarri really loves him. He's kind of like the playmaker, like kind of a Carrick-type player for Napoli. But I think, you know, they have some good alternatives. They have a young midfielder, Amadou Diarra. Those who watched Napoli play against Real Madrid last year remember how well he played there. He's 6 years younger than Jorginho. I think he could fill that role. Napoli's been linked to Sampdoria midfielder Torreira, really brilliant player.
Yeah, so
I think Napoli could move him. He's 27. Interestingly, Napoli has extended the contracts of all their key players, and the only one they have in is Jorginho. So I wouldn't be surprised if he moves in the summer, and I actually think he'd be a very intriguing player on Manchester United. So I think he's gone this summer. He's just at the age where Napoli should consider cashing in. And I think they've set themselves up in a way that they could survive his departure.
I want to ask you about Reno Gattuso before I need to wrap up. We don't want to keep it too long. But Reno Gattuso, we've seen so many false dawns at Milan. Forget about what's going on tonight with Arsenal. We've seen so many false dawns. We've seen this before. We've seen Milan, you know, look like someone's going to steady the ship. Gattuso's done a very, very good job with him, to be fair.
Yeah.
You know, hampered a bit by FFP, of course. He's come in an unlikely choice, but is he the real deal, Dave?
I have to say he completely shocked me because, like, when Milan hired him, I thought this was another former legend that they were just propped up to kind of take away the attention by how much the team was struggling. This was also at the time where there's so much talk on the doubts of the ownership, and I was like, here goes Milan, they're sacrificing another legend. He'll be gone. His track record previously, granted it was a small sample size, as Pisa and Palermo wasn't. It wasn't that good at all, and he's done a really, really good job. Aside from this match from Arsenal, Milan was on a 13-game unbeaten streak. They hadn't given up a goal in 600 minutes. Gotten a lot out of a lot of the players that had struggled under Montella. So I have to say that Gattuso really proved me wrong. I think the comparison to Conte might be a little bit unfair, but I could see him. I think he definitely deserves to keep going with Milan. He's done a lot of common sense things. He's stuck with, for the most part, the same lineup, made Bonucci that much better and Biglia. So I've been very impressed with him. I have to give credit to Milan. I didn't think that move would work out. So let's see if he can keep it going, because aside from today, he's been very impressive.
So much I want to ask you about. I wanted to ask you about Milinkovic-Savic and whether you think Lazio get to hold on to him. Did they get to hold on to him this summer, Dave?
Everyone wants to know about him. It's amazing, Phil. I've written an article about him last October. Every time I repost it, people read it more than anything else I put out. I mean, this kid is sensational. For a while, I used to think, you know, who's better, Pogba in his last years at Juve or Milinkovic-Savic? Now, I thought it was close. I have to say, I might give a slight edge to Milinkovic-Savic, a little bit better player offensively. You know, Lazio, I think they're going to have a hard time keeping him. Every year they sell a big name. I think they're ready. He's going to go for a monster fee. I think it's going to surpass Pogba's. Lazio has a great track record of selling. All the top rich clubs, including the two Manchester clubs, are scouting him, looking at him. Really an amazing player. If you're not familiar with him, definitely check him out. I like to compare him. He's got the Paul Pogba finesse and great moves, but also has Diego Simeone's like determination and grit. Just a fantastic player, like a really universal midfielder. So I think he's going to be the big name in the summer transfer window. I'm going to be answering hundreds of tweets about him on a weekly basis, so I'm ready.
Before you go, I'm going to end this on a somber note, of course. The whole world has been captivated by the sad death of a story, which we've seen Conte be very emotional about it. Of course, we saw Chiellini last night be very, very emotional about it. A reminder to all of us the fragility of life, and just take into consideration these things can happen at any moment. It doesn't matter who you are, this can happen, and we all take the game too seriously sometimes. But see, give me a quick summary of a story, Dave.
So I'll tell you this. You know, he was at Fiorentina. You know, he was their captain. Last summer, they sold pretty much all their veteran players. He could have easily left. He wanted to stay there to kind of start a new cycle. You know, I wouldn't say he was a great Italian defender, but certainly good enough to be on the national team. I think the testimonials of the players that knew him really can speak more eloquently than anything I could say. I thought Buffon said it best that, you know, he tries not to make public statements on his relationships with players that he knows well, and he was with Astori on the national team many times, but that he really wanted to make a point for his children to let everyone know what a good guy he was. So I thought that was really moving. Everyone who watched Chiellini yesterday after the match got also a sense from him. I think today the funeral that they did in Florence was really a beautiful moment. And I'm with you. It's just really a reminder of the fragility of life. You know, here's a guy that went to bed. He was in Udine getting ready for a match with Fiorentina and just never woke up. It's just really terrible. I remember waking up Sunday morning and the first thing I looked was someone asking me, oh, what do you know about this Astori story? And my reaction right away was like, some Premier League team must be scouting him today and someone's asking me about it. And then I found out what happened. So it just goes to show, like you said, we never know when it will be. So, you know, without sounding too, you know, emotional, it's just, we usually don't get a warning on when our last time is. So, you know, make the best of it with the right people is really what I would say about that. So, I think, you know, if you want to look at the tributes, Buffon was one of the best. Also, his teammate, Ricky Saponara, had a beautiful one. Yeah. That's better than anything I could say.
Yeah, just the message to take away from that, Dave, is more or less what you were saying. The fragility of life. Things can change in an instant. I've had this happen in my own life where 1 minute someone's alive, the next minute they're not. And the shock and the tragedy and the reminder, the daily reminder, look, this is just football. It's not that important. And when you're getting emotional online and you're threatening people or you're going after people because they've got different views, just remember it's only football. It's not that important. We all have different views and it's okay. Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. Thanks for taking time out of your day. Thanks for skipping the second half of the Milan-Arsenal game. I'm so grateful.
We're going to do the return. We're doing the return leg on my podcast soon, so I hope I got at least one away goal because I'm looking forward to having you back on mine. So hopefully I got at least one away goal, all right?
I am in your debt. So anytime at all, mate, I'll be happy to do it. And thanks for coming on and doing this, and let's not leave it so long next time. Thanks, Dave.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother.
All right, brother. See ya. Bye.